Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Today on Rambling About Cars, we've got Mercedes, we've got McLaren, but they're not together this time. It's not a Mercedes-McLaren SLR. We've got a new E-Class, we've got a new 750, and we're going to talk about some track day cars. And friends, I have a feeling there's going to be some spicy takes coming on this one. So tell your friends, share it now. Let's roll. It's podcast time. I am Christopher Smith, and co-host Chris Bruce is across the way. It's good to see you. I feel like it's been a long week already. It's Wednesday. So let's unwind a little bit.
Yeah, let's talk a minute. Obviously Smith and I talk before the show. We work together every day, stuff like that. He's in a spicy mood. He's a spicy meatballo right now. So for anyone out there,
I promise it has nothing to do with the really extreme diet that I started on Saturday.
Saturday?
I started it on Saturday.
Diet. That's a Monday thing.
No. Well, here's the problem, right? Okay. I need to lose a little bit of poundage here.
So do I. I'm working on it.
It's just not warming up in northern Michigan where I'm at. So it's harder to get outside for exercise. So it's like, okay, you know what? For a couple of weeks, we're just gonna cut this down to 1,000 calories a day. That's it. I can do that. 1,000 calories a day. I like fish. Some of the dill pickles that are like, I think like 5 or 10 calories per. I mean, there's lots that you could eat low calorie, but there's literally a pizza place that opened up right next door. Literally I could walk there in a minute. So every time I go outside, what the bit do you think I smell? So maybe I'm a little agitated, not going to lie.
Okay.
But friends, ramblers, this is where you come in. If you're following us, Motor1.com on Facebook, Motor1.com on Twitter, Motor1 on YouTube, now is your chance. You can join us live in the chat wherever you're at there on the socials. You can type in your comments, hit return, hit reply, hit whatever's on your keyboard, your phone, whatever you're using, and we can see it. We can interact live. And yeah, this one might get a little spicy. We've had some good debuts this week too.
Yep. Grupa FBC says, I know and understand the struggle, Chris, but focus long-term, not short-term. That's right, buddy. Like I said, So you are trying to cut calories. I am trying to exercise more. Hiking more. I've been walking the dog more. I haven't necessarily changed my diet, but I've been trying to get a lot more exercise. Mm-hmm. So we're both in there.
I appreciate that group, FBC. And I do have bicycles in the garage. I've got 4 bicycles in the garage, 2 mountain bikes, a 10 speed that actually the tire blew up in my face last year. That was awesome. And then I've got my freestyle bike that I had as a kid that I restored in 2017 and then promptly broke my ankle trying to ride again. So I can't wait to get back on the bikes. Once it actually gets appreciably above freezing. We're already rambling in the wrong direction.
Kind of, sort of.
We're already rambling in the wrong direction.
Grufa FBC says, just ignore the infomercials. I don't even see any infomercials. I don't watch enough literal television,
television. What's that?
So we're good here.
What's that? Anyway. I mean, Mandalorian is off for season 3. We just finished Star Trek Picard, the series. Those are the only 2 things I was watching. So now I'm just going to go back to fail videos.
Okay.
And rambling about cars, of course.
So my wife and my mother-in-law and I, so the conversation we had about Fleetwood Mac's The Chain today, we watched a bunch of versions We watched the original, obviously, the Fleetwood Mac. We watched Florence and the Machine cover them. We watched a lot of the Chain this evening. So that was our thing.
But did you watch anything? We should probably talk cars. Did you watch anything on McLaren or Mercedes?
I mean, I guess McLaren and Mercedes are Formula One related. And in England, on the BBC, they listen to The Chain before the races start. So in a way, I did.
Did you just pull like 6 degrees of Mercedes and McLaren on us?
I did. I actually did. Yes.
That's actually pretty impressive. Pretty impressive. Right. Well, and once again, before we jump in, folks, everybody that's listening out there, Motor One.com on Facebook, Motor One.com on Twitter, Motor One on YouTube, type those comments. We see them live. We can respond to them live. We want to interact with you. And this is going to be a really good episode for interaction. Actually, before we get going, Bruce, do we want to
rambling this episode?
Do we want to tell people about the cheap car challenge that we're going to do later? Because they can start looking for some cars right now if they want to participate.
Yeah, let's go ahead and do that. Can I present it? Is that okay?
Yeah. I need that. I need to be quiet for a little bit.
No, you don't. a topic later in the show is going to be about track cars, specifically about very, very stupidly expensive track cars. Mm. But if you look around, you can find legitimate race prepped vehicles for very reasonable prices. And I'm talking, our price range for this is $12,000 or less. Mm-hmm. If you go online and you search race cars for sale, I promise you will find them, because that's how I found them. Mm-hmm. And I found a few very interesting, very compelling examples for sub $12,000. Now, obviously, you're not going to go GT3 racing. You're not going to be at Le Mans. You're not going to be in Formula One. You're going to be, you know, regional, club level, that type of thing racing, but you're going to be racing. Like, it's still completely viable. So yeah, 12 grand. Anyone out there, go ahead, look around. It'll be the final topic of the show. And if you find something and you want to share it with us, go
jump
ahead.
Into the chat.
We'll be doing that at the end.
Yep, absolutely. And we want to have you along right now. Let's start the evening here with the 2024 Mercedes-Benz E-Class.
Oh, I picked the wrong car.
And Bruce pulled up the McLaren, which looks a lot. No, it doesn't look anything like the E-Class. We're going to talk about the McLaren in a bit. We're going to go E-Class because this one really generated a lot of interest with our audience at MotorOne.com. And I've been looking around on various socials just to gauge people's reaction to the new E-Class. This is the next generation, the W214 Mercedes E-Class. And it looks a lot like an E-Class. I mean, you hear it a lot when we talk about evolutionary versus revolutionary style. Evolutionary means, okay, they've evolved it, but it's still kind of the same formula. J Ferrari 427 Chrysler LeBaron, great race car. We're going to get into that later. 24 Hours of LeBaron. You guys are throwing me off right now.
I watch 24 Hours of LeBaron.
24 Hours of LeBaron. That needs to happen. Mercedes E-Class, evolutionary styling on the outside that we'll talk about in a bit, because I want to start with the interior. Because that's where things really, really happen, in my opinion, on this car.
Can I want to interrupt just for a second, just to throw out context here. And that is both in the comments that we've seen on our site, the comments we've seen on Instagram, everything about this story, people seem to hate this car.
Oh, they don't.
For whatever reason.
Oh, they really don't
hate this car.
It's, I mean, it's shocking because I don't. I mean, I don't know that it's better or worse than the previous.
Yeah.
But a lot of people are like
an E-Class to me. Like,
it's a lot of people are just like angry, like BMW grill angry. And it's a little surprising.
Yeah. 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 My last little bit, like, I don't get it. Like, it's not the most beautiful vehicle in the world. It's, you know, it's not like, no, you know, it's not, you know, oh my God, it's the prettiest thing ever.
Right.
But people are acting like it's the ugliest car to ever hit the road. And it's not that either. I do not understand the vitriol that this vehicle is getting, because it's just fine.
What a great word. Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's bad. Let's talk about the exterior here in a bit, because the interior is really where all the magic happens. And
perfect timing, because here are the interior picks.
Oddly enough, I mean, the car just debuted on Monday, or sorry, it was early Tuesday that it debuted.
Yeah.
But Mercedes actually debuted the interior like back in February. So the interior news wasn't necessarily new, although they did have a few new things to say about it. Let me just kind of refresh your memory. It's got a full digital makeover. It's very similar to the EQ, to like the base model EQ, where you've got just what they call like the big M-Bucks super screen, I think it's called, over hyperscreen. It's not the hyperscreen. I need to check
my own
notes.
I've never heard someone say it M-Bucks. I've always said, so I've never heard someone say it. To me, it's always M-B-U-X, but
I call it the M-Bucks. Just because, you know what, it's B-U-X. That's bucks. You got to have some bucks if you're going to buy this car, although we don't know pricing yet. But it has the super screen, which means you have the full screen going from side to side. The driver actually has a little standalone tablet digital display. There's the digital display in the middle. And then optional is a passenger display that people can watch videos, things on, and it's designed to where it won't distract the driver.
Yeah. We were just talking about this. Was it last week with the Cayenne? 2 weeks ago? I think it was last week.
I think it was last week.
Yeah.
But I mean, the big kind of takeaway here, and if you go over to MotorOne.com, in fact, I think Mercedes E-Class debut is still in our top slider. I wrote this one up. The big news here, I jokingly call lights, camera, action, because there are five cameras for the interior, up to five. One is standard, just one that faces the driver. You get a second optional camera that faces the driver for like a stereoscopic view. There are cameras. There's an optional dash cam. There are five total, one of which, yes, is a selfie cam. And I know we talked about this back in February when Mercedes unveiled the interior. The selfie cam.
Be careful. Our producer's watching. Martin Uh-oh. Lee, loving the live show.
Oh, Martin, you picked the wrong one, buddy, because you might need some mute buttons here later. No, I can be good here. I can be good. There's the selfie cam, and Mercedes actually, they do kind of reference it that way, because this car has a lot of built-in apps. They set up the system to where they, instead of separate computers running separate things, they all have it bundled together. So Mercedes says, okay, things run faster. There's more compatibility. We can do more with third-party apps. So you get Angry Birds. You get Zoom. Yeah, Angry Birds, if you want to play, you get Zoom capability, WebEx, and of course TikTok are all loaded right from the get-go. And Mercedes says, I mean, you know, there'll be room to add more things later.
Rupa FBC is not a fan of these features, by the way.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of tech in this car for sure. I don't know if it's good or bad. I mean, it all depends on how much you let it distract you, which is something I'm going to talk about here in a second.
I think my argument is, what you have to choose to use it. And I have to wonder how many I almost said EQS, because I was looking at our chat where Grupa FBC was just talking about EQS, where I wonder how many E-type buyers are actually going to use this tech, because
E-class buyers, Bruce, E-class.
Did I say
EQS? You're thinking retro. You said E-type. Which, yeah.
Oh, wow. I'm even worse.
I'd go E-type.
Anyway, I apologize. Anyways. I wonder how many users are actually going to use this tech, because it feels like a gimmick to me.
Well, I mean, they present it in a way, especially with Zoom, with WebEx, as, hey, this is the vehicle of choice for the fast-moving executive on the go. If you need to have a conference with somebody, if you're running late for a meeting, if you're just going from place to place, you can pull over. It doesn't work while you're in motion, but you can pull over, queue up Zoom, queue up WebEx, queue up whatever apps are going to be in there, and you can do your meeting right from your car, which, a neat feature. Yeah, It's a neat feature. There are lots of neat features on here, and it's one of the reasons why Mercedes has updated its voice activation system. Provided there's just one person in the car, it doesn't work this way with two people. Provided there's just one person in the car, you don't have to say, "Hey, Mercedes," anymore. You can just issue a command and boom, in theory, it'll do it. They're talking a lot about the AI system. The new E-Class, its AI system will try to very hard to learn your procedures, learn what you do. And then over time, for example, actually the example they give, if you get in the car, if you set the climate to a certain temperature, and then shortly before or after you say you turn on the heated steering wheel or the heated seats, it will learn this and then it will just do it automatically when you get in the car. You can also program certain procedures to take place automatically. It comes with like four or five set procedures in place already to control things like, you know, climate control. Mm-hmm. Of course, you have navigation, all of the other functions in there. But yeah, I mean, when you get to the point where you have to shortcut your command phrase from "Hey Mercedes" to just start talking, and then when you have an AI telling you everything, you know, AI trying to figure out what you want to do. In fact, I even kind of mentioned it in the article. I remind people later, hey, this actually is a car still. So let's talk about the engine and talk about the exterior styling. The engines, the powertrains, by the way, are essentially carryover from the previous generation. In the United States, you've got the E350 that still has the 2-liter turbo. 255 horsepower. It does have mild hybrid assist though on the 2-liter now, which can give you a 20 horsepower boost when you need it. The 3-liter inline six turbo is still for the E450. That's up to 375 horsepower now, also mild hybrid system. Transmission has been upgraded a little bit. Of course, you can still get a 4MATIC all-wheel drive if you want it. It does have rear steering. We saw that in some of the rumors, some of the spy photos, that it was going to have rear steering up to 4.5 degrees at the back wheels if you're under 37 miles per hour. If you're over 37 miles per hour, it's restricted back to 2.5 degrees. So, I mean, that's when you read the article, the mechanicals are kind of at the end because Mercedes, in their 44-page press release, which I'm proud to say I did read every part, every word, 44 pages, I read it. I read it. I told you it's going to be a little spicy.
Yeah.
The mechanicals are almost mentioned as an afterthought. Oh, by the way, here's what it has. Thing of note.
I was going to say, speaking of the mechanicals, we know AMG versions are coming. We have spy shots for sure. Of that. We for sure. know a wagon version of is coming. We don't know that that's coming to the U.S. or not. We'll wait and see there. We know an all-terrain version is coming. Again, we have spy shots of all these different versions. Now, whether some are for Europe, some are for the U.S., things like that. Mm-hmm. But this is just the beginning for the new E-Class.
For sure.
It's only going to grow from here.
And as our photo gallery is showing here, there are plug-in hybrid versions, but not for the U.S.
I bet there will be eventually.
Eventually, there probably will be, for reasons that we do not know. Mercedes, they are not launching plug-in hybrid models for North America at this time. So it starts with just the E350, the E450. I'm looking over my notes here to see if there's anything that I left out. And there really isn't. We have no pricing information.
Nope.
That's going to be available closer to the start of production, which is going to be a little bit later this year. I've talked a lot about just the various tech that's happening inside. It's really impossible to mention it all here on the podcast. Otherwise it would be an hour and a half of me just boring the hell out of everybody. But I think it's nice inside. I've never been a really big fan of just spreading, you know, just one big glass screen across the cockpit. I've seen worse things. And I do like Jay Ferrari's comment here. I got to put this up. It's like smartphones. Oh. You forget that it's primarily a phone. And that's kind of true. How often do we talk on our phones now?
Yeah, that's the that's the minority of the things that we do on them. You know, most times it's texting, it's looking at the internet, it's, you know, FaceTime, it's stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I also wanted to mention Martin Lee. Are Mercedes adding any subscriptions options with this, like their power boost for their EVs? And how do you feel about the trend for subscriptions for options? So we don't know about any subscriptions for this because, like we said, we don't know pricing yet. So we don't know that part yet. Now, if you're asking about my opinion for subscription options, in my opinion, it's I'm against it.
I'm against it.
Yeah, it's in my opinion. Well, like in my opinion, if you buy a vehicle and it has a function that's possible, you should get that function.
Now, and I will let me jump in here, Bruce, because once again, I read all 44 pages of that press release. And yes, kind of buried in there, they don't mention the word subscription. Good. But
okay,
but they do talk about various features that can be available with a one-time purchase or over time with some kind of plan. So they don't mention anything specifically about subscriptions.
But they're not closing that door either.
But that door isn't closed. It was very ambiguous in their press release. Ambiguous. Man, I need to take another drink. Keep talking, Bruce.
Are you just gonna keep pronouncing that word different ways? Ambiguous.
Ambiguous.
But let me give my opinion on this. Is that so? I own two vehicles now. One of them is, I'm kissing 20 years on, and one of them is well over 15 years old now. And it just makes me curious about future owners of a vehicle. Like, obviously when you buy a new vehicle, you're super excited about it. Like that's the thing. I also own one vehicle that's 1 year old. So I'm kind of in both classes here. I own this new vehicle and these old vehicles, and it just makes me wonder, like, whenever I go on to sell my Mini, whenever I go on to sell my Subaru, everything that those vehicles do will be completely available to the next owner of those vehicles, because there's no such thing as a subscription for them. With new vehicles, though, like this E-Class, I just have to wonder, like, what is that like, and how long is a company going to support those features? Is it 5 years, 10 years, 20 years? You know, like I said, I'm pretty close to 20 years on my Mini. I'm closer to 20 than I am to 15. Like, would they still support those features? And it's a fascinating question, and it makes me wonder, especially in a world where, and my mother-in-law and I were just talking about this, where she's like, I kind of wish like I could own a Model T. And I'm like, no, you don't. You want a Model A because they're much easier to drive. But regardless, that's a vehicle that's 100 years old. Or in the case of a Model T, that's over 100 years old. And they still exist, though. You could still, you know, buy them used. There are third parties that are making parts for them. You can keep them on the road. You can keep them going. And I just wonder what that's going to be like for vehicles from you buy today.
Well, that's a great point. And Ted Adam Green, thanks for joining us, Ted, the longtime Rambler. He has some great points here. Ownership is trending away with all items. He says we will end up something between ownership and leasing. I think that's the case. How many people are leasing a new car versus buying outright? I don't have that information. I mean, when you're talking about monthly car payments of $1,000 or so, it certainly is going to make a lot more sense for somebody to lease if they're not throwing a ton of miles on a car, especially for something higher up. So yeah, when you look at vehicles, and this isn't just Mercedes, this is across the board. When you look at new vehicles, where there's going to be a strong audience for leasing, how many times do you see automakers say, well, hey, this is free for the first 2 years, this is free for the first three? they're catering to the first owner.
Sure.
You come in, you buy this car, you lease this car. And even if you buy the car, you know, a lot of people every 2 or 3 years, you know, in this range here, they're going to upgrade to something new. They won't necessarily keep it for 10 years. So, the automakers with subscription services feels like they're really catering to that first owner.
Smith, am I mistaken that all of your cars are 10 years old or older?
Almost 20. The Subaru right now is my newest car, and that's a 2004.
I thought it was an 08. Okay.
I mean, would I like a newer car? Sure. Do I want a big car payment? No. I mean, look at all the crap that's behind me. I've got way more important things to spend money on.
Exactly.
Than a very expensive new car. That has a lot of features that I'm not necessarily going to use.
Totally.
I expect later this year I'm going to get something newer. The Subaru was sort of just a holdover, get me through the winter. I mean, working from home, I don't have a real need for a newer vehicle to run me all over the place.
I'm going to be totally honest with you right now, Smith. I don't believe you because I think you like that Subaru, and I also think it's going to last longer than you think it will.
I don't know. Okay. I took it on a trip a couple of weeks ago. You know, when I was out over the weekend, and the transmission was doing things that I did not like. I'll just leave it at that. Some nice hard thumping downshifts and a little bit of slipping going on. I've got some work to do there.
We got a comment from Martin in here.
Yep.
Our producer. So we have to share this one. Otherwise, he'll cancel us. So Martin Lee, Mercedes calls it acceleration increase on their EVs. The horsepower for the EQE models increases from 288 horsepower to 348 horsepower. The EQS models jump from 355 to 442 for an extra $90 a month.
Yep. That's the EQ, some of the subscription plans. And yeah, I mean,
I didn't know it was $90 a month. I thought it was like $30 a month, which even then I was upset about.
Well, and I think that's why in the E-Class press release, they were a bit more, and they were less clear about saying, you know, flat out subscription service. If you want to buy a feature for a one-time purchase, okay, you're buying it for the one-time purchase. It's like you select this option on the car and it's there. What's really going to come back to people are the second or the third owners where, okay,
yeah,
they want to have this nice vehicle. They want to have some of these experiences. It's already there. It's now behind a paywall, right?
Yeah.
And I believe Jay Ferrari was kind of talking about this a little bit. Apple is now doing this with iPhones. The new iPhone has satellite capabilities, but it's only free for 2 years. Right. So then if you're keeping things a little bit longer, if you get rid of that phone and you're upgrading to a new phone, the next person online for that phone, they don't have that capability. So I feel like that's really kind of where it's going here with subscription services.
And real quick, I'm going to share this from, I assume it's Andre. It could be Andre, but I'm assuming it's Andre. Deezer is on board. I want to assume that Andre or Andre is a frequent listener and knows how often we make fun of that we have listeners on Deezer.
We are on Deezer.
Yes. We're there. I don't.
We'll be there on Friday. The recording will be on Deezer on Friday. That's when all the audio, that's when all the streaming audio goes up for us Friday morning, Eastern time. So Deezer, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Amazon. Those are just off the top of my head. There's like six or seven more. So yeah.
Oh no, there are a ton. It's just that Deezer is such an absurd name that whenever I hear it, I think, yeah, if you're a Deezer, you could listen to me. Sure.
Yeah.
Oh, and then Andre is back, double smiley face. Nice. So apparently
we appreciate it.
If you're on Deezer, I love you.
We appreciate you wherever you're at, whether you're catching us live, whether you're catching us after the fact, listening on audio, even if you catch the videos afterwards, we love wherever you're at. And this is probably a good time to say, you can always email us podcast@motorone.com. If you're not catching us live and you want to chime in on this. Yeah.
We haven't, since we went live, we have not received nearly as many of his emails because we have these chat functions now. But if you want to email us, love an email.
We'll share the story. Let's talk about the exterior of the E-Class really quick before moving on, because I promise we have other things to talk about.
I
started here in the beginning saying, okay, you know, evolutionary styling. I mean, the front end, the lights are a little different. The grill, there's EQ influence up front. You've got that big grill, which it just has chrome trim standard. Optionally, you can get it with LED lights that light up. But behind the grill, it's a gloss black finish that stretches over to the lights. That's where you get a little bit of the EQ flavor. And then at the back, it has the traditional, what Mercedes calls their cab rearward styling, where you've got that really long hood, the really long bonnet, since Martin is on here with us, going back to that sloped boot, not the trunk, the sloped boot, with new taillights at the
really
back.
You're really appealing to our UK listeners. I hope we have more than two right now, but okay.
Crikey. All right. We've got the new taillights at the back that have three pointed star elements in them. And are they kind of gimmicky? Yeah, but I don't mind it. But this is where maybe Ramblers, everybody that's listening, chime in here. I don't think it's a bad car. I don't think the styling is terrible. I'm happy with it. I don't mind the gimmicky lights. I think the lights are fine. I've heard people say that it looks like melted butter at the front and at the rear.
I don't think so at all.
I've just heard a lot of negativity. Are we in the minority on this?
Maybe we are. Maybe we're the old folks now, Smith. And like the young folks, they want that sharp styling, that super angular look. And this Mercedes is not giving it to them. I don't know, but
I mean, we are in a time right now where we're seeing headlights getting slimmer and slimmer, and these are a little bit larger. They still have sort of that bubble appearance going on with them. I think somebody was like, "What is it? Is it 2002 again or something to that nature?" I don't know. How are we feeling about the styling, everybody?
I'll put this up. Grupa FBC says, I'm fine with paying a one-time fee for extra power. That's effectively what is already happening with ICE world, with the same engines in different states of tune, but monthly, hell no.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't really fight you there, but let's talk about, E-Class styling. To me, it's fine. I don't understand all the hate this vehicle is getting. Like, it's fine. It's not world breaking. Like I said, I've already made this point. I don't know why I'm making it again.
Well, let me share some of the comments here. If I can get our Disquist to load up here, some of the comments here in our article at motor1.com. Underwhelming, hitting everybody over the head with tech overkill and pushing the boundaries on how much interior lighting can be squeezed into every surface. It's like some focus group somewhere said, colored lights inside are cool. And that LED entire brief, the front fascia borrows too much from the EQ series that any dealer will tell you is not flying off the lot. I don't know what the sales stats are right now. The US only getting the sport model again, or do we go back to getting the optional luxury model? A little bit of hate there. Another commenter says it's not particularly ugly. It's just plainly disappointing to look at. That's like when your parents are like, yeah, I'm not angry. I'm just disappointed.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it would almost be better to just call it ugly. You know, it's just disappointing. This is not a nice design. And this decision of adding stupidity to the infotainment system, that was just plain dumb. Outgoing model pre-facelift is much better. That is ugly. Ooh. Like just about any Mercedes. People say they hate BMW's new designs. To be honest, I love them, but I really dislike new Benz. Okay, I think we can discount that.
I don't know if I that person. I'm
this is all over at our debut article at motor1.com. I won't go through them all because we've got to move on, but yeah, a lot of hate.
And it's interesting because no one has to buy this car, but everyone is entitled to their opinion as well. And I wonder, you know, so what? We know there's a new 5 Series on the way. There's a new A6 on the way, but it's even farther out. But it looks like, from what we've seen in spy shots, the new 5 Series, it's going to have a smaller grill. Maybe BMW has kind of learned their lessons with things. It's going to be interesting in this segment because it's always E-Class, 5 Series, A6. Mm-hmm. Those are kind of the answers to the test of your mid-class luxury vehicles.
And Group FBC says it looks good, clean, classy. All right. We're not the only ones, Bruce. We're not the only ones.
Yeah. And I think that's the point. It's good, clean, and classy. Did they hit it out of the ballpark? No. Is it hideous? Like, I never want to look at this vehicle again.
No,
it's fine. But if you look at the comments on our site and on Instagram, you would think that Mercedes designers came up with the ugliest vehicle ever. And
I mean,
I don't think that happened.
It's no Lexus LM, right? nothing's going to look as good as the Lexus LM. I can't even make that. I can't even do that with straight face.
Smith, talk just a second, just so I can show the folks what a Lexus LM looks like.
Oh man, well, if they were watching last week, they got a really good look at the Lexus LM. For those that don't know, it's the minivan that's offered, that used to be offered just for the Chinese market, but is now going to be offered, I believe, in European and Japanese markets. Still not coming to the United States, but for reasons I don't necessarily understand. I guess that styling language is a really big hit, especially in China. And when you see it, what's a good way? It's like the fish that got out of the bag.
It's a very
catfish. It's a very catfish design. With the big Lexus spindle grill, possibly the biggest spindle grill you'll ever see. E-Class. Oh, yeah. Sorry, Mercedes. You got a long way to go. You want a hot take, Bruce?
I love a hot take.
You want a hot take?
Yeah.
I think I like the new E-Class better than the McLaren 750.
Oh, that's not a hot take because I agree with you.
Well, it's supposed to be a segue too, so to move on to our other new debut.
Share the other car, but I agree with you.
Anytime we get a new McLaren, it's kind of a big deal. And this week we had the new McLaren 750S, which they call it a 750S. A lot of people are saying it's really more like a 720 facelift. I won't go either way. McLaren says about 30% of the parts on the 750 are new versus the 720. Bruce, do you have it available to pull up there? You had it up there for a second.
I'm trying, buddy. I'm trying really hard here.
Okay. I wasn't sure if you had it there. What do we know about it? Well, I mean, it's still the twin turbo 4-liter V8, right? Oh, power is up to 740 horsepower, 590 pound-feet of torque. Updated 7-speed sequential transmission, 0 to 60, 2.0 seconds. Quarter mile, 10.1. That's with the coupe. Now, they did launch the coupe and the Spider at the same time. The Spider is a little bit slower. It's only 10.3 seconds in the quarter mile, which honestly, it's if I'm going to do that, I'm just going to go get a Demon 170 and just be done with it. Both cars go 206 miles per hour at the top end. This car is 66 pounds lighter overall versus the 720. Obviously, they've restyled the front end, some of the air intakes, the scoops there, restyled the back end, that active rear wing, 20% larger. Here's an interesting stat that you don't usually hear that I really appreciated. I don't have quite the engineering knowledge to fully understand the scope, but the front springs are a little bit softer. They're 3% softer in the front, in the rear by 4%. I know generally speaking, when you stiffen up the rear and soften up the front, you're generally going to have a little bit more of a tail happy vehicle. I don't know if that was the specific reason for it. But I found it interesting that they were talking that specific about some of their suspension changes.
So I can say this, I did our backgrounder about the Demon 170 and they did the same thing on that vehicle. And the reason that they did that is it helps rearward weight transfer during a launch. So if you have slightly, you know, lighter front springs, a heavier setup in the back, that the front wheels come up, they put that weight on the back and you get a slightly better launch.
Mm-hmm. So I found it interesting, the same reason. Yeah. I mean, it was neat that they plugged in that specific of information. The interior refreshed as well. The gauge cluster in a slightly different location. We do already have some pricing on this too. The coupe is $324,000 and the Spider starts at $345,000. I mean, it's a supercar, right? You're not going to go out and just, you know, plunk one into your garage. Let me take a look a little bit further here. I mean, that's the crux of the 750.
Well, Smith, you were talking about having your own spicy opinions, and I know that's going to come up in our next segment, but let me go ahead and put out my spicy opinion. And I know I put this out in our regular show, or I should say our previous show that was recorded, but I've never said this during a live show. And that is, I don't like hypercars or supercars, kind of sort of for that matter. And the reason I don't like them, and I'll be totally honest here, and it's kind of like I got my therapist here. It's purely because I don't think I'll ever afford one. So it just makes me ignore them. And it's the same reason I don't look at Bring a Trailer anymore, because the prices for vehicles there have gone so high that it almost hurts my psyche to see what they go for. And so it helps me just to not look at it anymore. And that's kind of where I am in vehicles like this. I'm happy to write about them. It's obviously my job. I do it when it comes up, but I never lust after a vehicle like this, because to me, it feels like I'm never going to own this. I'm never going to own a vehicle like this, even in its used state. I'm never going to have it. So let me go ahead and compartmentalize this vehicle off of my brain. It exists. It's there. It's not for me, though. It exists somewhere else. That's where I am.
Okay. That's fair. I mean, I'm never going to afford, say, like, a surplus F4 Phantom or a T38.
You don't have, but
I still love them.
No.
I still love them.
You and I are both plane guys, and also I guess... you don't. So you are the level to get to there is so much more insurmountable, because you would have to get your pilot's license. You would have to get all of the certifications. Easy, my ass.
I took ground school in high school. I passed ground school when I was 17 years old. Okay, I ran out of money before getting my license. I ran out of money before getting the actual license.
So you ran out of money before getting to the air.
But I mean, this is what, $324,000. You could, for $324,000, you could easily go through, get all of your certifications, get all of your training for
and jets. Buy a Cessna 172.
You could probably have your 172. So I mean, there's your foundation right there.
You still have to buy a jet and you can find surplus all the certifications for that. Like,
you can find surplus. You could do all of this easily for under $1 million.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting we're talking about aircraft as we're looking at the 750, because I mean, let's give McLaren some credit. The way they designed the 720 and as such the 750, where you don't have the large gaping air intakes on the side at the rear, I still really like that feature about about McLaren, about the 720, and they still have it here on the 750. You have air intakes up on the top, but I mean, it's sort of like a staple for every mid-engine supercar. You have to have big gaping intakes on the side. And
Smith, are you telling me in a really nice way I was getting too nerdy about planes?
No.
Okay. All right. but no, you're right. That this vehicle, that it's fascinating that the way they created the aerodynamics of it, that they don't need those huge intakes in the rear fenders that we see in kind of sort of every other vehicle like this. There are still intakes in the rear fenders, but they're much, much smaller. And presumably that is because McLaren has figured out how to direct air there in a very specific way over the body. And so they're getting a huge volume there that, you know, that you wouldn't get otherwise.
Mm-hmm. And I still love that about the 750 here, that they still have that. It does have a new rear exhaust design. That's sort of pays homage to the P1. It's just got the center exit exhaust right up there under the spoiler. The redesigned lower fascia is such where they had to kind of raise everything up in the back a little bit. So you have that new exhaust in the back. It's pricey, but it's a little more powerful. I mean, it's a supercar or it's a hypercar. Will I ever buy one? No. Would I love to see one and drive one in person? Sure. I think in a lot of ways, I know McLaren, we talk about halo cars as vehicles designed to get somebody into the dealership and then they buy the car that they can actually afford. I don't know. A supercar company like McLaren, where they're only selling, I guess what you would call halo cars. I think it still serves sort of that basic function where, because there are models that are still underneath the 750.
There totally are.
And maybe you want a 750, you've got $100,000 or $150,000 to spend, which that's less than half. There's nothing saying that you can't be so enthralled by the 750S that you won't go out and find yourselves, a used McLaren that's maybe 4 or 5 years old that does fit into your budget. And then once you get into there, now you're in the McLaren family. Now they can sell you on various services, various parts, things of that nature. So I think it still serves that purpose. And 324,345 for the Spider goes on sale later this year, I believe. I'm just double checking that fact right now. It's available to order right now. Available to order right now. So they don't say exactly when it's going to come out, but if it's available to order right now, most likely later on this year.
So I'm just going to throw these out there. So I was talking to you and I was not looking at comments. So if I misinterpret anything that anyone has said, I apologize. Lewis Cross says, clearly you don't have an emotional connection more so versus the price. If you're talking about what I was saying, that these cars are so expensive. You're kind of right that at some point price becomes so high that I lose the emotional connection. But, there's a variance there.
Right. Well, and maybe there's something to be said for, actual availability and the idea that, this might be doable. That's going to add a little bit more excitement to it for sure.
Yeah, totally. For me, I think I've said this before, definitely on our recorded episodes, is that a 911 is kind of my dream car in a lot of ways. And it's honestly, it's kind of starting to turn into a 944 turbo might be my dream car in a little bit. It's still a Porsche.
And it's attainable. And that adds a little bit to it. I will say Lewis also said the weight of the 750 has me most impressed. Thank you for saying that. That's totally a good point.
Yeah.
We are in an age where it's like, 4,000 pounds. That doesn't sound too bad anymore. The coupe weighs 3,062 pounds, which I think is extremely impressive. The Spider is only a little bit heavier at 3,170 pounds. In an age where we're used to cars just 4,500 pounds, the GT500 I think was a little over 4,000, right? Everybody makes fun of the Dodge Challenger for being the boat you know, at like 44, 4,500. So yeah, well on McLaren.
I did want to share Grupa FBC's comment here. They launched too many special models in too short of a time. Too many special means none of them are truly special. This is so far out of my financial wheelhouse that I can't even comment on it. I know that has been said by some folks who, you know, kind of comment on this stuff on YouTube. I can't comment, literally, like, because it's so far out of my wheelhouse. But what I will say is that a lot of those special editions that they've launched, they've been interesting to me, that maybe I could see why, hey, I would buy this one and I'll skip these three, you know, that there's a specific one in there that are interesting. So I kind of sort of see what McLaren was doing there.
Yeah, no, it's an intriguing point as well. I think some people might say the same thing for, well, like I was just talking about the Challenger. But at that level, you know, again, it's a little bit more attainable. So, you know, maybe it hasn't watered down the Challenger quite as much. I'm kind of with you, though. I don't know that I have really an opinion either way on that.
Yeah.
I mean, in this segment, you're talking about a very, very small audience already anyways.
Right.
There's something there. If you want it, you'll be able to go in and get it.
Exactly. You know, the average buyer is buying something like a sedan or a crossover. It's something simply to get them around. And then as you move up that, you get to, you know, a luxury vehicle. You get to, say, a BMW, a Mercedes, a Lexus, an Audi, or something like that. And then even above that, you start to get to the vehicles that we're talking about now. And each time you kind of move up that ladder, you are leaving people under it. And it just makes the conversation more and more complicated.
Well, Bruce, are you ready to go even higher still?
I am. Let's go.
Oh, here we go. Okay. So we were talking about some of the topics that we were going to discuss today. And last week, Bugatti announced their Bolide, their track-only version of the Chiron, basically entering final production. And by that, I mean like final testing before it goes out. Of course, just to refresh your memory, okay, the Bolide, is that Bolide or Bolide? Bolide? It's an expensive hypercar is what it is.
I say Bolide, Bo. Oh man, even saying it like quickly, I put the emphasis on the second syllable.
Bolide. Bolide.
Bolide. Or Bolide. Is how I say it. And maybe Bolide. I'm wrong. Maybe it's Bolide, but
well,
to me it's Bolide.
It's still a $4 million, granted, exceptionally fast hypercar. That can't be driven on the street. It was originally announced back in, I think, 2020. And then as a concept, and then they said, oh, we're going to build some of these, just a handful. It's not road legal. It's designed for track use only. But it's still based on the Chiron. I mean, it's obviously, it has completely different bodywork. The engine, 1,577 horsepower. So I mean, yeah, insanely fast. It's really lighter. It's designed to go around corners with fairly reckless abandon. And I mean, it looks like it'll fit the deal, right? As performance fans, everybody should love it. It looks wild. It looks fantastic. It's extremely fast,
but Smith, this is where you get to be spicy. And
has the announcement came out, I was just like, why should I care? And I apologize, everybody. I'm going to be going on a little bit of stream of consciousness here because I've been trying to work this out in my head myself, and maybe all the ramblers out there can help me. I am all for track only cars. I want to make that clear. I am all for track only cars, like some of the radicals, like the Caterhams, things like that. Build it, do it, go out. But we're seeing more and more of these multi-million dollar hypercars. I won't necessarily say it's a track car, even though it's not road legal. We're seeing these multi-million dollar hypercars that are billed as go to the track. You enjoy it at the track. Are they really going to go to the track? And here's where things are going to get.
Well, no. Is the owner going to take them to the track is the better way to phrase that.
And I mean, that's the, well, in this case, that's the $4 million question. It's obviously billed as this amazing experience for the person that buys this car. But are we talking about an amazing automotive experience at this point? Or are we just talking about a piece of automotive art that somebody's going to buy? Maybe they'll go to the track once. Maybe they'll exercise it a little bit. And then they'll take it home and put it in the garage. And here's where things are going to get a little philosophical. Because I don't want to be that guy that's like really uppity. Oh, it's a car. It's supposed to be driven. Blah, 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 blah. I mean, we are talking about art, and art is very subjective. Some people are into cars simply because they think it's aesthetically pleasing. They like to look at them. They like that experience. And that should be okay, but
can I add two things really quickly that I think add or maybe subtract to your argument? I don't know. Former guest, former coworker of ours, John Neff, owned a Ford Taurus show that he famously did not like to drive. He would like to go out in his garage and look at it.
Yeah.
You own a Ford Taurus SHO. That is not currently in drivable.
that I can't physically drive.
Right. It is not currently in drivable condition, but is physically attractive. It's not that,
aesthetics
are bad. It's that the mechanicals need some work.
So yeah. I mean, it's not setting a benchmark for even me. I mean, I love the old shows.
What I want to say is that it's a fascinating dichotomy to me, because Neff could go drive his show whenever he wanted. You could not. But if you set both of those vehicles side by side to someone who wasn't necessarily familiar, they might not be able to tell the difference.
Oh, I can promise you they can't tell the difference, because I've encountered it, you know, many, many times. I love the engine in that car is what it comes down to. I love the engine in that car. I think, and I will argue this point to anybody in the world, it's one of the greatest unknown engines of all time. It's just a fantastic high revving V6 that came out way ahead of time. But anyway, we're getting off track here. Let me share some of the comments here. Jay Ferrari 427 says, this is something you buy for bragging rights when you don't know what else to buy. I mean, that could be a viable point. Group FPC says, but hey, money is gonna money. These are and purchases, not or purchases. That's a follow up to the comment saying these things won't get started in their humidity controlled garages, let alone run on a track. That does bother me, because these are built and designed to be driven. But do they have to be driven to be enjoyed and appreciated? Man. And this is where I feel like, okay, just take a deep breath. Thankfully, not everybody thinks like me, because we would be properly screwed if like 10% of the population thought like me. Okay. I'll admit that right off the bat, but I want to be that guy that's like, you, the only proper way to enjoy a car is to go out and drive it. I don't necessarily want to be that guy, but when we get to these multi-million dollar track only cars where not only are you not going to drive it on the street, I mean, it's now even harder to drive it. Now you have to put it on your trailer, or like with what Ferrari did, FXXK, where, I mean, they kept it for you. You bought the car, they kept it for you. When you want to come drive it, you know, give us a call, let us know. You can fly in and drive it, but we'll keep it here for you. I mean, that's And I mean, obviously Bugatti isn't the only one here. I mean, we've got the Aston Martin Vulcan. I mean, just a whole list of cars, vehicles like, Ford did a track only version of the Ford GT.
Yes, they did.
That to me, that at least makes a little more sense because they still, it's still that same car, right? It's still that same car. It's not completely redesigned. They aren't billing it as something completely new. They didn't change its name. It's still the Ford GT. That makes a little bit more sense to me. But I just, this announcement has been just rolling in the back of my head since it came out last week. And it's just like, where do we go from here? This is a track car that's never going to be used for its intended purpose, right?
I feel like you and I could be here for another hour talking about this.
Oh, hell yes.
I'm not BSing you right now at all. It's that it's fascinating because I think of other examples of things like this that, so, you know, so me and some of our coworkers are into watches, and
right.
There are watches out there that get produced and never get worn, that they sit in a hermetically sealed little box and they are gorgeous pieces of production and just super intricate, just as much as these cars are, and they never get worn. And to me, it's almost the same as never driving one of these cars. That,
yep, you're right.
But you then have to take that to the next level of like, is that acceptable or not? Is someone putting hundreds, thousands of hours into the creation of a thing, of a car, of an engine, of the carbon fiber body, of the brakes, the of a watch, of the various things, of the case, of the different pieces? You end up kind of in the same place that, like, is this something to expose to the world and show them that you own it? Or is this something that you have invested so much money in that you have to hide, that like it's in your garage, it's in your closet, it's in whatever? It's
well, and are you buying it for the world to enjoy, or are you buying it for you to enjoy?
Yes.
Group FBC kind of mirrors what you were just saying.
He says wine too, which is true.
Generally, his comment was, I generally don't have an issue with these not being used. They're still engineering masterpieces. That is exactly true. And that's, I think, what draws a lot of people to watches, you know, the mechanicals inside. And it comes down to, at the end of the day, I mean, it's all subjective. What are you into? What do you like? Right. And that's where I come back and all of a sudden I'm down on myself. It's like,
Come on, man.
Somebody can enjoy this car in a different way other than, you know, out driving it. That's what I would do. That's where I get my enjoyment. I don't necessarily just enjoy looking at a car. I mean, there are plenty of cars that look fantastic, but I would rather experience them, not just look at them. But for others, the experience is the look, right? So right. Am I elitist now for thinking you can't be that way? I don't want to be that way, but I'm kind of that way. So
it becomes so complicated. It becomes such a discussion. And that's why I said you and I could talk about this for another hour. And Jay Ferrari 427, he puts it perfectly. It's a crime not to utilize a car to its full potential, lol. But let's put that in another way. So my mother-in-law, who I currently live with, she owns some precious stones. It's not diamonds. There's a precious stone. I forget which one it is. I want to say it's rubies, but I don't know. But essentially, they know that the number that exists are the number that exists that are out there, that you're not going to find more of them. Maybe it's not rubies. Anyway, that she owns some of those, but they're not set into a necklace, a ring, a whatever. It's kind of the same thing, that if you're not putting your car out there that anybody could see, you're hiding it from the world.
Or you're just, you're just appreciating it yourself. You don't need to have validation through the world. My God, I am flat. I'm literally flashing back to philosophy 312 in college right now.
Well, but in the same
way,
we had
a whole discussion on this.
Stones that are limited, that, you know, there are a finite amount of in the world. Again, I want to say they're rubies, but I can't. Anyway, there are a finite amount of them, and she has some of them, but she doesn't wear them around. She has them because she appreciates them. And is that not the same as the car of just putting it in your garage and just leaving it there? And it's a mind-blowingly complicated conversation because I don't know the answer. I consider myself an intelligent person, but I don't know.
And I don't know that there is an answer, but I mean, we're talking about something extremely subjective here. I mean, let's be honest. It's extremely subjective. Maybe some of the issue I'm having is that automakers are billing these vehicles as the ultimate in performance, but you can't drive it. You have to take it to a track. And we know you're probably not going to do that because you're going to pay $4 million for it. And you don't want to bid it into a wall on your first time out.
Exactly.
I feel like at least Dodge with the Demon 170, they could have built a dedicated drag car that's not street legal, right?
They could have built a dedicated because the Heliphaunt engine is not street legal.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there are. Well, and Ford does the same thing with the Mustang. They're Cobra Jet cars. That you can buy that aren't street legal. They're dedicated for drag racing.
Yes.
Could Bugatti have built this car to be street legal? I mean, they're saying this is the car, and it's not just Bugatti. There are a lot of manufacturers. This is the car that we want to build just for the sheer aspect of performance when there are no rules. Well, bull, beep. I got to beat myself there. That's just a big pile of bull. If you're building that car, you're building an F1 car. I know there are rules in Formula One, but really, you're building the ultimate performance car that's just the pure essence of driving, you're building an F1 car. You're not building a big car with doors and like still fully functional interiors. Maybe that's where some of my animosity comes from.
Yes, I definitely see where you're coming. So we try to keep the show to an hour and a half. And we could definitely go longer. I am going to present something real quick here.
Okay.
That is on the absolute other end of the spectrum. We don't know the price of this vehicle, but we know it is far less than $4 million.
And it will see track use.
Yeah. It's made to see track use. Mm-hmm.
I'm fine with that.
Literally what it's made to do.
Well, if you talk to Bugatti, that's what the Bolide is made to do.
Okay, you're right.
You know, but is it going to do it?
I wrote up this story today. This is the Radical. And if you're not familiar, Radical, they make, at least in the UK, some of them are road legal because road legal can mean different things in the UK than it does in the United States. But Radical predominantly makes race cars. And so this is the SR1. This is their entry level vehicle. And they just upgraded it to their XXR specification. It has a 1.34 liter four cylinder engine. That's right. It's sub 1.5. So it's almost like a Ford Fiesta. It's between my Mini essentially has a bigger engine than this, but this one has far more power because it's tuned for that. Mm-hmm. This one has 199 horsepower and 183 pound-feet of torque. It's got a 6-speed sequential transmission. So this is a track car. This is it's what it does. It's a track car.
It's purpose built. And I mean, it's an open cockpit. Yep. It doesn't have doors.
Nope.
It doesn't have a radio. It doesn't have, no. I mean, it's designed to go around the track, and it doesn't have 1,577 horsepower, but no. I mean, what's it weigh?
I don't know the total weight. I know the engine weighs 183 pounds.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a lightweight runabout, and I think this is cool as hell.
Yeah, it's very cool. For anyone out there who's not familiar with the company, look up Radical Motorsport, mm-hmm. Radical Engineering, that type of thing. They are kind of an entry level motorsport type of company. So this is the very, very beginning. And they also offer V8 and turbocharged and things like that type of models. But the SR1 is, that's where you start. And again, it's a sub 1.5 liter. It's 1.34 liters. And this is how you start on the track. And to me, I'm going to be an asshole by saying this. I hate saying that word because that's like our PG-13 word.
But the PG-13 where we've got a few more to go yet.
But I respect someone who buys this and decides that they're going to go track racing more than someone who buys a Bolide. And let me explain what I'm saying by that. I feel like someone who does this is serious about it. That they understand that they can't necessarily handle over 1,000 horsepower. That, you know, 200 horsepower, that's, well, hell, by modern standards, that's like a mid-sized sedan. But, you know, you're still in a very elemental, it's got a fiberglass body, it's got LED headlights, it's got a wing. This new version, it has a fin on the back, like a lot of LMP cars, that it's a starting point in that kind of area. And if someone bought this and said, hey, I want to be a race car driver, and they bought this, or someone bought a Bolide and said, hey, I got $4 million and I want to be a race car driver,
That's where I run into my little bit of a dilemma.
Yeah, no, totally.
You're buying the Bolide because that's the car that you want. You are interested in it. You're not necessarily the fact that it's track only probably isn't going to matter. It's a fantastic car, fantastic piece of engineering. Does it bother me that they probably won't use it for its intended purposes? Yes, it bothers me, but.
Well, no.
I feel like I have to maintain objectivity enough to say it shouldn't bother me.
Use it for their intended purposes. Sorry, this one or the Bugatti?
Bugatti.
Okay, sorry, I missed that.
Bugatti. I mean, they have to buy it for the reason. It comes back to what mods are you going to do to your car? Are you going to put big exhaust tips on the back? Okay, not really my thing, but you need to do what you want to do with your car. And that's where, you know, I can have opinions, but I still need to step back and keep that objectivity. I don't want to be that guy.
Yes.
I need to step back, say, you know what, if you want to buy, if you have the means and you want to buy the 4 million Bolide, and probably never take it to a track, if that's what you're into, if that's what you appreciate, then I got to respect that. Even if I don't necessarily like it.
Totally agreed. That
and maybe they have a Radical too that they also then take to the track.
Yeah, it's what makes the automotive hobby and what we write about every day so complicated is that mm-hmm. everyone is into a different thing. That I am not a drag race type of guy per se, like a Demon 170. I think it's the power and whatever. It's super cool to me. I would rather go around a track and have something that's super nimble and super quick. Like that's what gets into it for me. But I understand that all of it is a huge, you know, a huge world of automotive enthusiasm, because there are also guys that want to go out and, you know, get in the mud and like go off roading or go slide around and drift or do this or do that. That the automotive hobby is huge, and that we can't judge. Well, we can judge people. Yeah. It's really complicated that
it's a wide open world for everybody to enjoy. Except you Grand Am owners. Get rid of your Pontiac Grand Am. I draw the line there. This is a no Grand Am. And I should specify the I think it's the third gen or the fourth gen
You have to specify.
The earlier Grand Ams, you're fine. If you own a Grand Am from like 93 on, we need to have a talk.
And I can see you are kind of the star commenter. If I could have internet. That tonight,
of course we judge.
Yeah. And that's the thing but judgment, like everything else, has a continuum. I can judge you and say, hey, that's a dumb shirt you're wearing or something like that. Or I can judge you and say, that's a bad political point you're having. Or I could judge you and say, hey, you're a terrible person. Like, there is, judging someone has a whole total term of meaning. And the car hobby is the same way, that like, if you're not hurting anybody, like me personally, if I see someone, and I have seen this, someone coal rolling someone,
I think everybody hates that. I think everybody outside of that very small group hates that. I think we're pretty safe there.
I hope so. Or the people that, what are they, the stunt shows? Is that what they call them? And like, I've generally heard about this in California.
Like the street takeovers. Yeah, that's
also, to me is dumb. Like,
yeah,
I don't like that either. But, you know, so there are certain.
Well, now we're just talking about, like versus legality. Right. And that's for another topic here. This is rambling.
I like fourth gen Camaros and I really love fourth gen Trans Ams. I like them a lot.
I would rather have the Trans Am than the Camaro, but I have no problems for the fourth gen Camaro. It came out at the right time.
I'd rather have the Trans Am. But again, Camaro, hey, you be you. If the Camaro is what you need, go for it. But I'm going to like you a lot more if you got the Trans Am.
I got your back, Bruce. they're the same underneath. The Trans Am totally with the pop-up headlights and the nostrils on the grill. Whew, yeah, that does it for me.
Oh, God, yeah. That does it. Anyway, so...
We're rambling about philosophy on this episode, folks. If you're just tuning in on Motor One Com on Facebook, Motor One Com on Twitter, Motor One YouTube's channel, we're going over track cars. And Bruce, we've had quite a discussion. We should probably wrap this up with our cheap car challenge.
We have. Again, for anyone out there who has found a track car for sub $12,000, please put it in our chat. I will throw that one up there. Smith and I will go first because we're the hosts and we already have our stuff prepped. But if you've got one, please share it with us because I'll happily share it. Smith, do you want to go first? Do you want me to?
Technically, I have three and I'm having trouble deciding. Okay. I'm going to start with this one just because, as an auto enthusiast, I know you're supposed to own one of these.
Ooh.
I found a 1985 Alfa Romeo Spider ready to go turnkey, $12,000. It's in Illinois. I love this description from the seller. Updates from the seller. Very non-original, many super hot parts, alcoholics, Schenkel. The bunch of stuff that I don't even know what it means. But they also say very, very non-original, purist beware. 90,000 miles, clean, title, driven. There's just one photo here of it doing its thing. Hey, you know what? For 12 grand, you get a little Alpha Spider. I'm sure that's going to be a lot of fun. It sounds like there are some mods on it. 1,940 pounds. A hoot, loud, ooh, rude, and fast, a well-sorted and perfect first classic Alpha or unique cafe racer. So I don't know. Maybe it's also street legal. But
Maybe. I mean, what state you live in, and there's like,
even if it's street legal or not, when it comes to a track car, I don't want a track car that I can drive to the track and drive home, because when I'm at the track, I'm going to be paranoid thinking I still have to drive this home.
Yeah, that's fair.
And I've been to track days, and that's how I felt. And there have been a couple times where I was close to not driving home. So I just want to go and have a good damn time. So, yeah.
Well, Smith, you are going to love my pick. And if you don't, then I hate you.
We better not have picked the same one.
Oh, there's no way in hell we did.
Okay.
I have a 1983 Mazda RX-7 race prep.
We were
$7,500.
We were looking at the same website too. I saw that car and I thought about it, but I was like, nah.
$7,500.
All I hear right now is just a screaming rotary in my head.
As you should.
Yeah. Because,
yeah. You are sub 12 grand. You were going racing. You got a rotary.
It would be a lot of fun. I mean, those I can't turn that down. They are nimble, they grip, they can stretch the skin off the side of your face if you put a good set of tires on them. It'll certainly make a good chunk of noise.
I love it. I love this car. Okay.
Is it turnkey all set? Good to go?
That's what the listing says.
Okay.
I lost my.
Well, the reason I ask is because my second pick here kind of isn't.
Hold on, I got it pulled up here.
Okay,
let's see. Holy belt Mazda RX-7 with a 12A carb motor, most likely built by Tri-Point Engineering. Engine is solid along with the drivetrain. All fluids fresh and new. Carb is a factory Niki rebuild and dialed in.
Everything's ready
on this car for the track. All is needed are a fresh set of tires.
There you go.
So yeah.
Fresh set of tires and you're ready to go. That's a good find, Bruce.
I'd love to put that thing around the track. Go ahead.
Well, the regular ramblers out there, you know how much I love the Z31 300ZX.
Yes, I do.
I found one on the same website, Bruce. It's only $3,500. If I remember correctly, though, it does need some work. Racing SCCA, ITE class, project car. It needs the dash put back in. Intercooler plumbing. It does have the engine and 5-speed manual ready to go, 3-liter V6 turbo. It's got everything there. It's just some assembly required. And for a track car, you know what? I'm fine with that. I'm okay with that. I want to know the inner workings of the car, and I have some mechanical knowledge enough to handle and fix most things.
And for anyone who's listening, if you're buying a track car, you need to know how to wrench on it, because you're going to do it between every single, qualifying, practice, race, everything. Like, it's going to require constant attention. That's just the way it is. Like,
and at $3,500, I have a lot of room to do some extra work on this if I need to before I get up to 12 grand. But I mean, the fundamentals are already there. And I absolutely love this era of Z car, the Z31, one of my favorites of all time. I think it looks fantastic. It's just a classic 80s wedge, turbo V6. They handled pretty well, stock right off the bat. Because this is what I was thinking of when I was looking at track cars. It's like, man, I'm not even sure where to begin. And then I just thought, well, let's just look at something that I think I would enjoy driving, not necessarily. Cause I mean, I was looking at like NASCAR truck series stuff, chassis for $3,000 or $4,000. It's like, well, I could buy this chassis that has the suspension, the brakes and everything on it. Go get a 500 or 600 horsepower crate motor, toss it in there and have one hell of a race vehicle. Right. But do I really want to drive that? I don't know that I do. I feel like I really want to drive this car.
Yeah, that's, yeah. I you're not getting any fight for me, man. That's a good one. All right.
Did you have any more?
I've got one more. I'm going to share.
Yep.
Go ahead. And again, it kind of fits exactly what you were saying. It's a car that I'm familiar with. It's was the second, not the specific example, obviously, but second car I ever owned. It is an E30 BMW. It is prepped for spec E30 in the NASA series, $9,850. This car apparently has won one race at least. Let me read this to you. 20 over. Yeah, it's just, it's been prepped and it's ready and it's good to go and it's well within our price range.
Yeah.
And again, you know, this is, you know, we talk about cars like the Radical, the Bolide, which is $4 million, things like that. But like, if you really, if you want to go racing, it's not a poor man's sport whatsoever at all. But
it doesn't have to be that expensive either.
Exactly. It's not, you don't have to be a, you know, a multimillionaire either, especially when you're talking about regional stuff like that, or especially when you're talking about autocross.
Like autocrossing, there are, yeah.
There are a lot of people that will buy a vehicle for autocross. It'll be their second car. It'll be fun. They'll take it around, you know. And, you know, if it breaks down, it sits in the garage for a few weeks, few months, whatever, you fix it up and you take it back in. It doesn't have to be that much. And that's kind of the beautiful thing about motorsport is that you,
well, I mean, you don't even have to join a specific race series. If you just have a car that if you have a track nearby that has open track days and you just want to go and you could invest 10 grand into a really nice, you know, like a Razor or something off-road like that, dirt bikes. You could invest 10 grand or so easily into a snowmobile if you're in the northern latitudes.
Like you.
Or I don't have quite that much in. You can spend 5 or 6 grand for your car that you just take and you're not even in any racing series. You're just going there for the fun of it. And I know, for me, for a fact, from experience, that big power and amazing chops doesn't necessarily translate to something super fun, because you've heard me talk about this before. I had that 2000 Chevy Metro 3-cylinder 5-speed that was slow. It was roly poly. And I just enjoyed the hell out of tossing that thing around every chance I had. So it doesn't have to be expensive at all. I promise you that car was not expensive, but Bruce, I'm glad. Go ahead.
I want to share this comment from JFerrari 427. And he said, great thing about used muscle cars, cheap and fun. And he's right. Whether it's Camaros and Mustangs, mostly these days, Challengers a little bit less, because to my understanding, it's a bit harder to make them handle, but Camaros and Mustangs, certainly the aftermarket, like if you want a track car, that's a great starting place.
Yeah. You know? I mean, my SN95 sitting in the garage, I can go, I was 20 years old. No, it's more than that. It's like 26, 27 years old. I can go buy pretty much anything I want for it still.
Exactly. And there's a huge aftermarket, and you could modify it. If you wanted it to be a drag car, you could do that. If you wanted it to be a track car, you could do that. If you wanted, you know,
sure,
kind of anything in between, there's a huge just range of aftermarket parts for those vehicles.
Sure.
So yeah.
Well, let me get my last one up here, because we're just about out of time.
Go for it.
I'm glad we went with three. And Bruce, I'm glad you were talking about autocrossing, because that's kind of what I was thinking of with this. This isn't a track car. This is a 2005 Subaru Impreza WRX STI, and I'm a little suspicious. This is up in Montreal. It's 5,900. the description is very short. It
what
sounds
is that, like 5 hours for you?
Yeah, I mean, it's not that far away. And I mean, it's Canada.
No. 5 hours is a haul. Five hours there and back? That's a day.
That's nothing. That's nothing for me, man. I'm a road warrior. I mean, it's presented as being a great car, ready to go.
That looks like a good one.
Typically, these go for more than $5,900, but hey, I found it online. I'm a big fan of Rally. This is a vehicle where if I was just looking for a fun car, maybe I could still drive it to the track. I would still want to trailer it. I could go run it around a road course, and then I could also get into a Rallycross.
Yeah.
And just all-wheel drive, go toss it around, have some fun off-road. Track day car doesn't have to be on pavement, right?
No. So two things. I've got a comment I want to pull up here, but I want to mention that as well. There is something that's called Rallycross, and I don't know how many of our listeners know about that, but it is essentially autocross. Autocross classically takes place on tarmac or asphalt. You go through. There's also Rallycross that takes place off-road. And that is focused on vehicles, you know, an all-wheel drive or a front-wheel drive vehicle. They tend to have the advantage there. But still, it is an off-road event like that. And so something, if you could find a cheap WRX or STI, or as EKG Canadian Enthusiast says, a last-gen Evo, if you could find one of those, that would be perfect for that type of event. So, yeah.
Well, let me, Bruce, let me extend this just a little bit longer, because while you're talking about that,
I'm here.
Here's what I did in a former life. That's
a Buick.
That's me rally crossing a 1994 Buick Roadmaster. that was 13 years ago already, where I went to a rally cross. I bought that car for, I think, like $700 or $800. I thought it needed transmission work. It was just a computer issue. So I swapped in a new PCM. It drove great, shifted great, came with big old all-terrain truck tires on it. So I was like, well, if it's got truck tires on it, I have to rally cross it. And I don't think
you did.
This is an older article over at Winding Road, where I know some of us got our start. And I did, and it was a blast. And I can just imagine how much fun it would be with a car not 20,000 gazillion feet long, weighing, you know, the size of a small aircraft carrier.
But no, I think it's worth mentioning that autocross exists and rallycross exists. That I think rallycross, a lot of people don't know about those events. And it's worth mentioning because, you know, some people want to be a rally driver. Some people want to be your Colin McRae, your Petter Solberg, your, you know, Richard Burns, all of those kind of tell when I was watching Rally. But, you know, that is possible, that you can kind of do that type of thing.
Well, I think we should probably wrap it up there, especially because my camera has gone out of focus here.
You are a bit out of focus.
We're trying to get it back into focus. Yeah, it's not coming back into focus. So we should probably
wrap it up. Actually,
we should probably wrap it up at this point. But again, if you are catching us, if you want to catch us live, Motor1.com on Facebook, Motor1.com on Twitter, Motor1 on YouTube every Wednesday night at 7:30 PM. We're live. You can chat with us, type in your comments there on socials, or you can always catch us on audio platforms. We go up every Friday, Spotify, Apple, Google, so many other platforms, and Motor1 on YouTube, the Motor1 YouTube channel. All of these Rambling About Cars episodes exist. You can go back, watch this episode, watch the ones that we've done like a year and a half ago to see what all has changed. And just with the wave of the hand, I'm back in focus. Look at that.
Still kind of out of focus.
Yeah, you're right. I'm very out of focus.
Okay. Well, for everyone out there, we love you. Good afternoon, good evening, or good night, if that's for those folks who are listening on audio. And for anyone of those who are listening right now, we love you. It's just, I love doing the show because I love talking about cars and I love talking about cars with Smith. And it's so cool now that we have live viewers that like, I can pop your comments and up and I can like respond to that too. And it's so fun. And, but here's the thing, for all of you live viewers, we want more of you. We love Ted Adam Green. We love EKG Canadian Enthusiast. We love 640 even 647F. We love all you guys, but share it with your friends. Tell them, hey, Rambling About Cars is every Wednesday and at 7:30, and they talk about cars and they're fun and they're cool and they sometimes, you know, they put your comments up.
Let's be honest, sometimes
we try all of those types of things. So, you know, we love all of that, but we also love all of our audio listeners who mm-hmm. spend time with us. And we know that you folks exist. We are on Audio Boom and we can see the stuff there. And so I appreciate everyone who is there and spends time with us there, that, you know, you're listening to a podcast, you're listening, you know, you're driving to work, you're driving home from work, whatever it is.
It's we just appreciate fantastic. You.
Yeah. So with that, I'm going to shut us down for tonight and thank you everyone and good night and goodbye.
We'll see you.
Moro Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
It's Pro Savings Days at Lowe's. Get up to 35% off select major appliances and save an additional $1,000 when you buy four select LG major appliances. Plus, get a free DeWalt 20-volt max 5-amp-hour battery when you buy a select DeWalt 20-volt max tool. Get the job done for less at Lowe's. We help. You save. Valid through 9/26. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. See associate or Lowe's.com for more details and qualifying items.